Hello everyone and welcome back to Make Better Wedding Films, the home of new ideas for radical films about people in love. My name is Ben, I will be your host. Before we get into the show, we've got a couple of announcements from our sponsors. The first of which is MusicBed. Now, recently I saw on one of the wedding film forums the other day, people talking about where to license music and MusicBed and the cost of MusicBed being really expensive. And it was really funny to see all of the seasoned professionals chime in on that post saying, no, it's not, and it used to be a lot more expensive. We used to pay $50 a song for multiple songs in our wedding films. And the fact that you can just have unlimited access to as many songs as you want for, what is it now, like $80 a month? It's mental. That the value of that is just off the freaking charts. And if you want to make better wedding films, if you want to make the best wedding films you can, you want the best music possible. So look, for the seasoned professionals in the room, it's just a complete no-brainer. MusicBed is the only option. And if you want to sign up with the promo code MBWF, you can try it for free. See if you like it. Trust me, you will not go back. Our next sponsor is Film Convert. Now, today we're talking all about cinematography and how to level up your cinematography. And once you've captured those beautiful images, you want to color grade them. And if you're interested in getting that warm analog feel of 35mm film on your digital footage, then check out Film Convert. They've got amazing preset packs designed to take any camera model and transform it into some of the most popular motion picture and still stocks on the market. So yeah, check out Film Convert, and if you use the promo code MBWF10, you'll get 10% off, and let them know that we sent you, which helps out the show. Alrighty everyone, that's it for the announcements. On to the episode. On today's show, I'm sitting down with Russian filmmaker Artem Korchagin. I've been sent his work in my DMs time and time again. We have an amazing conversation today, talking through his incredible cinematography techniques and his approach to capturing a wedding. I learned so much and had a fantastic time talking with Artem, but I do need to address the elephant in the room, which is the current political climate with Russia and the rest of the world. I've made my political stance known to Artem, and he knows that I'm doing this disclaimer ahead of the episode. But yeah, my approach to this episode is purely from two wedding filmmakers talking about their craft. We deliberately don't mention any politics during the episode or any context around the current political situation. And if you've got any questions, feel free to DM me, and I'm happy to chat with anyone. But yes, I hope everyone can enjoy the episode. And there's nothing else left to say, really, other than my name is Ben, and this is Make Better Wedding Films.
On different moments of the day, we have different responsibilities in our team. I prefer to delegate the main shots, the cell shots, to my second videographer, because we both know how to do it. And this gives me an opportunity to experiment, to have some shots that if I do wrong, I always have a backup from my second videographer. And this, it's very calm for me to have the backup shot of my second videographer. And in the moments like ceremony or speeches, the third man, he also shoots like a third camera. So we have a second operator, like he shoot bright, close up or middle shot. Third man takes groom shot and or steadicam shot from the ASL, and I run like a fox, trying to capture some guests, some maybe very wide angles from behind, from far away, or some like, you know, abstract shots or emotional shots. So I always choose to give tasks to my team that they can handle and give myself an opportunity to be wrong and be calm about
that's because
I rely on my team very much.
Yeah, I love that definition where you say you allow yourself to be wrong in a safe way. I really, really love that. I think because, you know, I look at your work and a lot of your shots are very, very interesting and creative and bold and risky. And
thank you.
And we're going to get into all of that. But I think this is a lovely base to have sort of ground that conversation and saying, like, look, if we want to go and experiment in these ways, we need our safe grounding, our safety shots, basically, you know,
taken care of
so that we've got the room and the safety to play. So I think that's a lovely place to start with. Amazing. So, look, we're going to be talking about cinematography and beautiful shots and everything. And whilst obviously it's not about gear, I think it's maybe do we just start with a very brief overview of the kind of equipment you're running, what you choose to shoot with and why, and just to give us a bit of context as we move into more of the creative thought process and how you approach cinematography. So what does your gear look like on a wedding day? What are you using and what are your assistants using?
You know, I had a video on YouTube that I shot, I think, maybe or so years ago, where I just grabbed my bag and put all of it, and saying about what we use. Not many things changed since that video. Now I'm using my main camera is Panasonic GH6. For second and third camera, it's Panasonic GH5. So we are adepts of Panasonics. Maybe we will switch this year to S5s, S5 II, S5 2X. We're thinking about it right now because it's been a lot of investing in lenses because of crop factor and full frame. But right now it's GH6, GH5. We have three of them. And lenses is Sigma 18-35 art.
The classic.
Yeah. It's my one of my main lenses that I use. The second lens I use mostly is Zeiss 50mm, 1.4. Just gorgeous lens.
Yeah.
Love it. And the third lens that I use is Olympus 75. So it's like 150 in full frame equivalent. So this is three lenses that I use mostly. The second operator uses Lumix 20-35. So it's like 24-70.
Again, more of a safer lens, crisp classic lens.
And he uses it on a gimbal mostly, so he can switch the angle quickly. The second lens for him is 7-14 Olympus, also. And for third man, it's 15 Lumix Leica, like 15, 25, and 42.5. So like 30, 50, and 85.
85, yeah.
Yeah. And we also have a 35-100, like a 70-200 zoom in our bag for ceremonies or all that stuff where you need a long focal length.
Yeah, cool. Nice. Interesting. And for you, are you handheld all day? Because I look at your work and there's a really, really nice mix of that kind of smooth, considered shots that may or may not be gimbal, but then also that really, really beautiful, energetic, raw handheld feel. And you're using that kind of like slow shutter stuff and all that kind of stuff. So are you personally handheld all day, or do you yourself switch between handheld and gimbal?
I always shoot handheld during the day. So if I need some shots from a gimbal, I'm asking the second guy for this shots, because he do it better than me.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yes. And
that's cool.
Just do your best, man.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's cool, because I often find myself switching between handheld and gimbal throughout the day, because I want that mix of that like raw energetic stuff and then the super smooth stuff, and I keep like it's just, I don't know, it's a constant like decision in my head, like do I do the gimbal, do I keep it handheld, do I switch, do I not, and I feel like I would enjoy having a shoot. I can say that I want that on a gimbal, go get it for me. Because I think
it's a pain, like, it's always a pain to grab the gimbal, then put off the camera, then put it on again.
I need to change that. I like that there's very defined roles. That's what I'm working towards, is just getting like just that really, 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 really clear, being like, this is my role, this is the second's role, this is, I have thought about getting an assistant on too. So it's really cool, good to hear, and nice to just even see the subtle differences even in like glass choice between yourself and your second shooters and stuff. It's cool, man. Amazing. One last thing. Since we're talking about cinematography, we need to talk about light. What lights are you bringing? Do you bring quite a comprehensive lighting package to weddings, or do you work with and rely more on the plan? Because, like, I look at your work, and some of the lighting in these reception spaces is stunning. Is that all you? Is it the planner in the venue has just got amazing lighting set up that you're just sort of augmenting? What does your lighting setup look like?
Mostly, I think we are very lucky about that. Most of the time, we rely on technical support. Mm-hmm. In our country, it's very, very... on a high level now. Mm-hmm. So it's, you don't have to discuss with couple that you need professional light on your wedding day.
Yeah.
It's like everyone knows that they need this light.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a good conversation with the technical supports who bring the lights to the wedding, and we do the stuff together. So, in a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And
so you're working directly with them to sort of tell them what you need. In terms of are you working with them in terms of creator stuff, or more just like, like I need this much light on the person doing speeches, or like, is it that sort of level?
Most of all, yes. So we just discussed before the reception starts. We discuss what light will be at what every given moment of a wedding day. So on the speeches, mm-hmm. we need just natural light, like daylight on this spot and this spot. And we don't need the colored lights.
It's cool. I like the idea of working with a specific vendor like that, and cool that it's just like kind of standard, but I think that it's something that we could maybe think about incorporating that idea, so that when we're working with planners, say, like, you know, pitch the idea, I'm like, hey, like, why don't we like bring in a lighting technician to like help light this space and stuff, and light it in a way that really obviously highlights just the in-person experience but works for us as filmmakers too. I think is a really cool way to
It also works not only for us but for the atmosphere of event.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely.
And this was the idea that sold these technicians to everybody.
Yeah,
they just showed what you can do with light, and everyone wants this.
It's great. It's I don't know, I think videographers just and at a certain price point you do have to assume the videographers bring the lights, and we bring our lights and we light the thing, and but yeah, do it a better, classier way. Get a professional in. That sounds great. Amazing. Cool. Well, let's transition now to talking a bit about more of like, I guess, your inspirations as a cinematographer and how you've got to the level that you've got to. 2005, Artem rocking up for his first day on a wedding. How have you sort of learnt and developed your skills? What sort of things have you do you look to for inspiration, and have you done any kind of specific training and upskilling? Like what have you fed yourself to be the cinematographer that you are today?
It was a long way. Also, it was a slow way. So it wasn't, you know, that like 1 year is just blown up and then I just started shoot perfect shots and all this stuff. First 4 years, actually first wedding I shot professionally was in 2007. So I have a gap in 2 years from first wedding and the wedding that I shot for the money. And I decided to make it as a business in 2007. So I like to start from this year. So I started in 2007. And the first 2 years, it was like just I came to wedding. I shoot all from start to finish, not pausing anything, just switching the cassettes. And actually, I didn't know what I do. I just put in my camera on the people. My inspiration in that moment was like music videos, MTV and all that stuff. So I didn't know what I should do, what wedding should look like. Just shot anything and make something from this and put it on a DVD. Then in 2010, I first saw the still motion. Now they call Muse. Patrick Monroe, maybe you know him. That was, you know, first time when I saw what wedding should look like. And I said, wow, it can be a cinematography piece, not just any kind of video. And then I saw the video from a Russian team they called Safe Moment. And they was like, you know, still motion in our country. The first runners of great wedding videography. And I attended the workshop of these guys. And they completely blown away my mind. Everything I did before was wrong. Everything. Mainly I shot from, you know, the Dutch angle. When you shoot not horizontally, not vertically, but something in between. Yeah. That was my main style in that years. Then I come up with cinematography and what picture, how do you make a picture is essential. So you have to train your cinematography skill to see things, to see things beautifully. Maybe I think the most, one of the most main skills for a wedding cinematographer is to see and capture ordinary things beautifully.
Yeah.
But I try to bring this skill higher and higher each year. And after 2010, when I attended the first workshop, I just go to workshop after workshop. Any videographer, cinematographer who done great works that I liked, I just attended to workshop and learning from them. How do they shoot? How do they, what lenses they use? What cameras? What settings? What, how do they make these movements? You know, it was the time when all videographers in our country used the technique like, you know, drinking videographer, always moving, always move your camera. No matter what, always move your camera. And I tried to understand why man should, why he do this move instead of every other move. I think that was one of main main things that I tried to replicate in my works. So movement, but not because you have to move your camera, but movement that can be beautiful.
Intentional movement. Absolutely. And have you got, I love that the fact that you just dove straight into like education and workshops and go like, you know, I want to learn from this person. Are you still at a place today where you feel like you're still learning, or like where are you at today in terms of feeding yourself inspiration or learning or being curious?
I'm still learning every day. I think that it's one of the things that you have to be curious always. When you catch yourself on the thoughts like, I know anything, I know all. I know how to do this thing, and this thing. And I think this is moment when you have to stop. To stop, do what you do and try to find some another doing for yourself. Because curiosity, I think I'm pronouncing it right. It's main thing to be passionate about what you're doing. To learn every day something new. Maybe that you already learned but forgot because you learned it many times ago, many years ago. And, you know, God, I knew this, but I didn't implement this for years. But I should do it again, but in a new way.
And are you, where do you look to now to feed yourself that? Are you looking at, do you look at other like wedding filmmakers? Do you look at music videos still? Do you look at movies? Do you look at art? Where are you sort of, finding that curiosity for yourself?
I look for all the things that you told. I learned from wedding filmmakers that works of who I like. And I learn from them and I attend four workshops from them. Actually, I do two workshops right now. I'm attending. And art always is, it's a great a river of inspiration. When you're just not just looking at that, but when you try to analyze that, why this picture? Why the object is here? Why it has these colors? And what the artist wanted to say by this picture? How light is going through the face of a model, and trying to replement this to my work.
Do you? Oh, this is so many ways you go. Is there an area in particular that you feel is a thing you're really focusing on right now? Like, this is the thing I need to. Is like the thing I need to work on?
Yeah. It's firstly, it's cinematography right now, because I think I'm not good at composition right now. Yeah,
disagree. I think disagree, but no,
not enough. Because I analyze my recent shootings, and I see that, man, why you just moved your camera a bit to the left? It will be a perfect shot, but now it's not perfect shot.
And that's
I'm trying to do this on a shooting, not after the shooting, because it's really pain for me to make a crops and clean up some things that I can move out the shot on the shooting.
Or
work with a light, so I can just put the light a little bit and give a perfect shot. But right now I look at myself and I don't like what I did with the light. I don't like it, actually.
It's funny because, I think look, we're always comparing ourselves to other people, for good or for bad. But, you know, like, I mean, I look at your work and it's gorgeous. But I think that's a good thing for people to keep in mind, being like, always, like you said before, as soon as you feel like you know everything, and then it's all over. So if you're constantly looking at your stuff and go, how can I improve? How can I improve? How can I improve? That's the journey. It's always all these little incremental things along the way. And you'll pop your head up one day and wonder how you even got to where you are.
Yeah. And when you stop, you just have to go out.
Yeah, totally. Amazing. So I'm curious to know, when you walk into a space or, you know, whatever, let's just say, when you walk into a space and the couple's there or whatever, what's the first thing going through your head when you're thinking about crafting a shot? Are you thinking about where you are in relation to the couple? Are you looking at the light? Are you looking at the architecture, the colors? I'm sure it's all of it at once, but is there something that sort of sticks out as you, as your anchor of like, okay, here's the thing I'm going to start to think about, and then I'll build things on top of? Is that even how you think? Like, what's your process, I guess, is my question, when you come to thinking about how to craft a shot?
It's a really good and really tough question. It depends on the situation. Sometimes it's all about the light. So you just see the light, and no matter what is around, you just put the couple in that light, or you just waiting while some people just walking through this light. So it's like you just wait. You compose the shot and you're waiting for the perfect face.
Yep.
In other situation, it's all about the composition. So you know that, I know that this is a great shot when the couple will be at this point. And it's always a pain for me because I don't like directing. I don't like directing the couple. And I always, first of all, trying to rely on Fortuna. I will be lucky. I will get the people in this point. I will be lucky. I'll just have to wait. And if, you know, like 10, 15, 20 seconds, nothing happens, then okay. I'll just have to direct a little bit. Because it's always, you know, this thing when you directing the couple or some people, the viewer can see this. He looks and he knows right now. Oh, he asked the people to stand here. He asked them for do this for him. And this is not the true shot. It's not true. It's an acting. But I want that all. It will be always true that it will happen. It happened exactly in life, and I captured it.
This is an interesting. Okay, I wanna probe into this now because like there's some of your shots that have a very editorial feel to them, and I don't know, it sort of tweaks my brain to be like, how could this just, I don't know, I guess my question is, how much are you constructing and how much is you finding moments, if that makes sense? How much are you creating versus finding? I'm not sure exactly what my question is here. I guess I just want to probe more into what you said around when you tell someone to tell a couple to do something, because like they're not actors. He tells them to do something, and it's just it's obvious that you're just telling them to do something.
Okay, that's it's a big question and a big area of what to talk about, because first of all, I have to say a big thanks to the photographers. A big, huge thanks. Because we, as a video team, always works with a photographer in a duet on the second roles. So when we have a portrait shooting or a morning shoot with a couple where we can directing the couple and asking them to do some things, we always give the first role to a photographer. Because I know that it's a moment when they do their pictures. And they will do it better than us.
And do you feel like you need to adjust anything they do to suit video, though?
Yeah.
Or are you working with photographers who naturally ask for more of that fluid direction versus the photographers who are super precise on how they pose and like move this elbow up and, you know, all that sort of shit?
We work differently with a different style of photographers. So if this, you know, like poses with no motion, so we just discuss with the photographer that if you shoot this shot, if you done, give me the sign. Not telling the couple, just give the sign to me. And I will add some motion in this particular moment. Then I grab the couple to you again. So for the couple, it looks like the flow. I'm not... It's not like the photographer asking, do this. Then I ask, do another thing. Then photographer, then do this. We just trying to go with the flow. Do this, add motion. Then freeze, add motion. Freeze, add motion. I think it's more it's better for the couple, firstly.
Yeah.
It takes less energy than to switch between the scenes that photographer and videographer wants to shoot. And if the photographer likes more, shoot more kind of movements, walk here, then stay, hug each other, give little kiss. So this we just shoot like a photographer's from a different angles. You know, it's there is a moment like you shoot from the shoulder of photographer. You shoot him shots. You steal from him, from the artist. Some kind of people asked me, and my team also asked me, then, is it okay that we like stealing the poses from the photographer? And I think that if a photographer doesn't have, if he is not against this, if it's okay for him, then it's better for all, for us and for couple. If he is against or she is against it, okay, we will do our thing, but it will be more harder for a couple because they have to switch between scenes, and like you need to be more romantic, but in 5 seconds you have to run away and like smile, and then again romantic. It's kind of hard because I was a model because I had my wedding, and it's so hard. It's so hard to pose, and it's so hard to switch between the emotions. Like you have to be sad, you have to be happy, then you have to be you have to be serious. You have to be
serious.
It's really hard to switch between these things, and I try to make it easy as possible for the couple firstly, and then I think about what shots I can get from this situation. So it's kind of different on every wedding, because every photographer is, every person is, has his style, and we have to adapt to his style to capture some shots and not to be and not take much energy from the couple.
Yeah, it's about being respectful to both the photographer and the couple and understanding everything. But I like your approach of like still letting the photographer lead, but working with them to be like, hey, like, here's what we need. We don't need to like go like my turn, your turn, my turn, your turn, because that fucks with the couple's vibe.
Exactly.
That's a pain in the ass. So do you have any tips, I guess, for videographers on ways they can ask the photographer to add, or just like, how can you prep a photographer to be like basically do what you do, but we're going to like offer some movement suggestions as part of that. Like, do you have some go-to, I guess, like movement adaptations to work with photographers' direction in a smooth way?
Yes. Yes. You know, you can give me the situation or the shot, and I can add emotion to it.
Sure. So say the photographer's getting a couple to embrace facing each other and like arms around and just put their heads together. Photographer might just ask a couple to basically just like put your heads together and hold each other, and they're just standing there still.
Okay. And then you add some motions, but motion by their faces. Mm-hmm. So give him a little kisses around his this side. I don't know how to say. Let me find this word. You may rub your noses, but not the side, left, right, on the up and down.
Yeah.
A bit.
Yeah.
You can be close to each other than far to each other. Like, give some micro movements.
Yeah. Micro movements.
Close your eyes, open your eyes. Breath through your mouth and all this kind of stuff. So just a little bit movements. You don't have to add some, like, raise your hands, put your hands on.
Yeah. No, I like just that phrase, micro-movements is great. Micro-movements is fantastic. It's a great way to think about it. Because you could have this, just a whole little back pocket of micro-movements. They would just add an energy, right? Just add something to... And I think this is the point. Something to where you're not actually fundamentally fucking with the photographer's direction. You're just augmenting it. So I think this is the distinction. It's just like, if you want to do it, like, sort of do this way, it's about finding ways to augment without completely fucking with the photographer's direction and what they're trying to do.
Yeah, exactly.
No, it's a great way of thinking about it. Amazing. Cool. Well, I think as we start to move towards the end of the interview, there's a couple more questions I've got for you. To just kind of, you know, things I want to pluck out of your brain. That's him.
Okay.
And the first of which is, I guess, the idea of variety of shots. Because, you know, I look at your work and there's just a beautiful variety of, like, tight and wide and frenetic movement and slow shutter and beautiful wide sweeping vistas. And, like, what's going through your head on the day? Actually, these last two questions are kind of connected. What's going through your head on the day in terms of figuring out how to craft an image, how to make sure you've got enough variety of shots, and are you thinking about creating sequences of a moment that's unfolding in front of you, or is just each individual moment its own shot for you that you're then just sort of keeping track of the variety as well?
It's always about variety. Always about variety. So I try to take as much shots as I can in the moment that I have. So if it's, you know, like dances, so if people dance in 30 minutes, I will shoot 30 minutes of dancing. Mm-hmm. I will switch my lenses. I will switch my shutter. I will switch my frame rate. So I will try to shot in 25 FPS, then in 50, then in 120. Then I'll crack my shutter speed to 180 and give this, like, So as much I can, it's like a sport. Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So you just do it. Because when I, you know, try it or something, feel lazy and I sit down, the moment I sit down, I see, oh, how beautiful she's dancing right now. I remember this moment forever because I didn't shot that. And it gives me... the second thought that, okay, grab your camera and get this shot.
Yeah.
So it's always about variety. And first of all, I start with the middle shot because it's simplest shot that you can make, always. The simplest shot is medium shot. The safest also, but it's the less interesting because it's like, it's medium shot.
Because it's safe,
Yes. Then I do close or detail or take to another side and take a wide angle. And also it's a huge plucky for me because my second videographer also tends to think this way. So use as much time as you can. Use all of your lenses, take this shot, try this girl on the left, of your shot. Try to recompose it to the right. Try to recompose it on the bottom and take a huge air and at the top of the shot. At the shooting, you always, I think, and my team thinks, you have to get as much as you can. Mm-hmm. And on the editing, it's the other side. You can take as mm-hmm. less as you can. So the editing is another side of a coin. So you just cut. Let me find the words.
Yeah, I think I know what you're saying. Where it's like, yeah, it's basically it's discipline on the day to get as much variety as you can, and then discipline in the edit to use as little as you can. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. No mercy on editing. No mercy to the shots on editing.
I love that. Love it. I think this is what we landed on as the secret of why I look at your work and it's like, wow. It's because it's exactly that. It's ruthless on the day, like hunting for that perfect shot, and then ruthless in the edit going, this is it, and we're not going to muddy it down with other stuff. This is our hero. Yes. I love that. I love it.
Yes. You just read my thoughts.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's fantastic, because I think there might be a trap to be like more here and then more there, you know, like capture all this footage and then make these super complicated sequences. But I guess it's not really the case. There's beauty in simplicity, but you need that material to work with. And I think your concept of like starting safe, because we, like, at the end of the day, we've got a job to do. This is a live event we're capturing. We start with our safety. From there, that is our base to play. And we can play and play and play and play and play and hunt and find the little golden nuggets that we then hero in the edit.
Yeah.
Love it.
And forget the backup things.
Yeah. Yeah. It's frustrating, because I think I got to a point too where I had second shooters at every wedding, and then I got them to do my safe stuff, but then I never used their footage in the edit. And I was like, why am I paying these second shooters? But I think this is giving me a little bit of clarity in terms of like, well, if I don't have the safe space to bounce off, I'm going to be the person doing the safe stuff, and no one's going to be doing the scary stuff, the creative stuff. So, food for thought.
I like this definition, scary stuff.
Yeah, scary stuff. Yeah. Cool, amazing. Well, Artem, I think that's a lovely place to round off our conversation. And if people want to learn more from yourself, is there any place they can go to, I guess, get in touch, follow you? How can people get a hold of you and dive into your brain if they want to?
I think there's one place then where I can try to express my brain, my thoughts, and decompose my videos, and trying to share to explain why I did this in that way, why I take this shot, how I take this shot, and all this stuff. So it's like a backstage for my works. I do it in my Instagram, in you know, it's like this green circle of closest friends thing.
Yeah,
it calls like this. So I take the stories for close friends, where I explain and decompose my works.
Cool.
And also, I like to explain on one-on-one conversations.
Mm.
It's hard for me to speak for many people because I am an introverted person, and it's kind of hard to speak for much people. And but one-on-one, I can open myself and speak more freely, and think it's a good way to learn something from me. Is just chat me, type me in, and we can have a call if you want.
Yeah, amazing. Like, yeah, cool. Amazing. Well, I'll put links to your website, your Instagram, and things like that. If people do want to get in touch, follow those stories, or like get you on a one-on-one call, we'll have all that information below. But yeah, thank you very much, Artem, for your time and sharing your knowledge. You've clarified a few things for me, and I'm sure for our listeners at home as well. So thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Amazing. Alrighty, guys, that's going to do us. Oh, sorry, you're going to finish up. Sorry, talked over you.
Can we add a little bit explainer in the start of our conversation lately on the editing? So I just want to say that my English is poor and all that stuff, just to prepare people for.
Not at all. Well,
for this.
I appreciate the effort. The conversation will be a lot better than if I tried to speak in Russian, put it that way. So yeah, not a problem, man. Appreciate the effort. Alrighty, guys, well, that is going to do us for today's episode. We'll see you all next time. Bye.